What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode number 130 of Confessions of a Market Maker. I'm your co-host, Ray, aka All Day Ray, aka John Stud. And I'm joined here by my eclectic co-host, former market maker, 20 years and current day trading educator, the man with more aliases than our guest has rental properties, the silverback of Howe Street. JJ, how's it going?
Good brother, how are you? Excited today. Excited today.
Absolutely. I'm hype, man. I'm trying to bring the energy today. And our guest is an American businessman, equity fund manager with 5 billion assets under management, real estate investor, business author, and founder of the 10X Growth Conference, 10X Health System, Cardone Ventures, and 10X Studios, author of 7 best-selling books and the 10X Growth Conference, which is the largest business conference in the USA. You guys already know who I'm talking about. It's Uncle G. Grant Cardone. Grant, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
Guys, great to have great to be with you on this beautiful Wednesday in Miami, and I'm really pleased that you find what I'm doing interesting enough to share it with your listeners.
Absolutely. I mean, Grant, this is a cool one, cool podcast for me because I haven't said this on the podcast before, but like a while back, I worked a sales job. I was selling personal training packages in a gym. And so while I'm like making eating breakfast in the morning on the way to work, I would listen to the audio version of the Closer Survival Guide. And I probably listened to the book like 3, 4, 5 times. And I was in charge of like training sales guys underneath me. I would drill them on all the rebuttals. And I say this in an endearing way, Grant, but like we aspire to be as like savage as a closer as you. And I had a team of pit bull salesmen with me, man. It was a phenomenal book.
It's unfortunate, but salespeople and closers and that whole skill set that wraps around the ability to, whether you're doing it, in person or on the phone, that skill set is so absolutely necessary in life. This is the
Oh,
book you're referring to. I haven't talked about this book in a long time, but like when I finally learned how to close a transaction, like it was, I didn't know there was a system that there were certain things required. Like you got to have a decision maker, they have to be qualified, and there has to be urgency. I was 30 years old and I was starting to study this. And I was, I'd made a commitment to like, okay, I got to increase my income. And if you can't close a deal, whatever the deal is, you're not going to get income. The people might like you, but you're not going to get a deal done. Well, fast forward 37 years, and I'm watching Trump push the tariffs for the last 5 or 6 weeks. And I'm like, oh, I know exactly what he's doing. He's trying to get the decision makers to the table with the tariffs because they weren't at the table. There was no urgency because you got to have three things. You got to have a decision maker. They have to have wherewithal to purchase, meaning the money or the interest. And three, they got to be at the table. There's got to be some urgency to do something. And he had none of that. So what did he use? He used the only leverage he had to get their attention, to bring them to the table. And here we are 5 or 6 weeks later with countries signing deals.
Absolutely. Well said. Yeah. And I always felt like, and I during that time period too, Grant, I was going through all your books and I felt like that one didn't get as much shine maybe publicly or in the media. But like to me, that was the most practical, hands-on. And like you said too, it's sales is just a life skill to have that you can transfer to other areas of life. And I always thought it was an excellent book. Excellent book. So Grant, this being a trading and investing finance podcast, I have to ask for the audience, also for those who perhaps aren't familiar with your, we'll say like investing philosophies. You don't invest in the stock market. A lot of the audience trades for a living. Some do it well, others blow up. We've interviewed many of the world's top traders and investors. So from your seat, what's the core difference between how you think about wealth and how traders and equity investors think about wealth?
Well, when I think about wealth, I'm not thinking about income. I'm thinking about, if I want income. I was in a Spaces room on X yesterday, and they were talking about using Bitcoin to create income by investing in MSTI. And I was like, if you need income, why don't you just go to the street corner and ask somebody to give you income? Like, you don't have to make a bet. You don't have to, invest to get income. The first income would be earned income, which is I'm going to go out, I'm going to trade some skill set I have, whatever it is. Could be courage to simply walk up and ask somebody for money. You'd be surprised how many people would actually give you money. I know panhandlers that make more money than the average middle class American. So, and
Wow.
they're not trading anything. They're just going out and getting income. So when I talk about investing, I'm like, okay, I invest my time to get income. But now that I have money, I have some income. How can I invest that income to create wealth? And so for me, it's income, I get rich, and I create wealth. These are three completely different strategies. I'm never going to be a trader because I'm just not built to be a trader. I don't want another job. I don't want to make 10,000 decisions. I want to make one decision and wait for time to prove me out to be right. But look, I don't have any degen running through my system where I have no propensity to be a gambling addict. It doesn't interest me. I don't like this. I don't like the, I won, I lost, I won, I lost, I won, I lost. Even when
Right.
I win, I didn't bet enough. You know, it's like getting a blackjack and you're
You
like,
never
God damn.
win.
Yeah, you never win, dude. There's
Yeah.
no win. And
Well,
by
as
the
far
way, the only real winner in that trading is the IRS. That's who
yeah.
wins, really.
Well, we've you know
And
we've sorry, Graham. We've talked to like psycho like you know like you got these like trading performance coaches who some of these hedge funds pay like top dollar for, and like that's one of, we had one of them on. And that's what she said. Like, there's never any winning. Like, it's like you always are coming away with a negative feeling, even if you do win. Like you mentioned, you never, you know, didn't bet enough.
yeah.
And I think too, you know, maybe for some of the audience to know, like, JJ used to, he worked in Vancouver on house trading. JJ, you could obviously elaborate a little bit more, but like, from my understanding, you don't see like maybe an edge, or like you see the riggedness that can come with like Wall Street and finance, and like you just rather play another game. Like you see an edge in what you do. Like you see a clear
Yeah.
defined edge there as
Well,
opposed to investing in the market.
yeah, I mean, the people that I studied that got wealthy sold a stock, sold, took a company to the public marketplace and
Yeah.
sold stock and ended up
Exactly.
owning a majority of the company. They didn't make their wealth trading stocks.
Exactly.
So, you know, I have a friend that's worth, I don't know, Bob's probably worth today, this week, he could be worth 18 or 20 billion. 2 weeks ago, he's worth 13. And he and I had this conversation. He's like, "You got to quit trashing stocks." I said, "You hadn't made any of your money in stocks." He's like, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "You have sold three successfully 3 times, taking companies public."
Exactly.
And he's like, "Wow, you
Exactly.
know what? You're right, dude." You know, I said, "You sold into the market."
Yeah. And that's what a market's for.
Yeah.
It's to distribute,
Yeah,
you know?
exactly.
Yeah,
Not to
exactly. And
consume, right, JJ? Not to be the consumer in the space.
exactly. And that's why a lot of people have trouble trading because they think like a consumer, not like a distributor.
Yeah.
And so all I've ever done my whole life, as Ray said, was I've taken a couple of hundred companies public, from penny stock to NASDAQ. And I've been the guy behind the scenes who's liquidating the stock for the insiders, creating the market, working with the promoters, working with the media people, but also trading out the positions, you know? And so I'm always Larry the liquidator. And you know, that's how guys make $200-300 million in a week, by selling, blowing, you know, stocks trading at $20. They get their stock at five, you know, and they're always getting it at a discount to market and selling it because they've run a convertible or something on the company and financed it. And yeah, it's funny because Ray was saying that you don't invest in stocks. I don't invest in stocks either. You know, the only thing that I actually hold long is Bitcoin, and saw you talking about that about 3 days ago. So that's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not a trader. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I'm not a flipper either. Like, I don't want to sell something just to have to go buy something else again. And because how many times can I be right? So, look, what I've done, I don't know everything, guys. I don't pretend to know everything. I've done extremely well for myself. We have $5 billion worth of real estate. With only $2 billion worth of debt. I own three or four other companies. They have no debt on them at all, zero debt. We're privately held. we'll do $750 million of revenue from those 5 companies this year. We're buying real estate. This is institutional quality real estate, best in class, unbelievable locations. We buy it from institutions like a MetLife or a New York Life or Nuveen, or these are massive $80 and $100 billion companies, and they sell assets like they're like a restaurant would deliver toothpicks. Like they're like, yeah, take as many as you want. Like they have no emotional connection with this asset, and we buy those assets during correction moments, like we're going through one big, a massive correction in commercial real estate right now. We buy that real estate 15 and 20, 25% below replacement costs. We know it's going to be there 10 years and 20 years and 30 years from now, reducing revenue. And then we're adding Bitcoin to the purchase in one fund. We basically buy the real estate with cash, buy the Bitcoin with cash, drop it into one fund. JJ, you can help me take this public in the future. I've never taken anything public,
Oh,
but
I'd love to.
we're putting 10 of these together. We've already showed it to Cantor Fitzgerald and to Ivan Kaufman with Arbor Group, both heavy big real estate guys. Oh, excuse me. And we're going to put 10 of these together, about $1 billion worth of real estate, a couple hundred million dollars worth of Bitcoin on the balance sheet, and take it public and basically disrupt how people invest in real estate from a really boring, 5 or 6 or 7% annualized return, 12 or 15 when you exit. Adding the Bitcoin, this thing could go to 30 and 40% per year. And remove all the volatility of the Bitcoin.
Yeah,
Nice.
it's well, one, I know that's music to JJ's ear. Saying he'll help you take it public. I already know he's jumping up and down behind there. Grant, this is super interesting, intriguing to me. I've been somebody who's been a believer in Bitcoin for like quite a while. And to see, obviously we're talking about this, like you're not like, stock market, that's not your thing. I think a lot of times people will equate Bitcoin in terms of investing in that manner. I guess like what's the thesis here? Like what why get involved with Bitcoin and merge it with well with real estate in a fund?
I was given Bitcoin in 2013. I was given 100 pieces for a speaking gig. The group called and said, "Hey, can you speak in Las Vegas on this date?" My team gave them the fee. They said, "We can't pay cash. We can pay in Bitcoin." Nobody knew what Bitcoin was. I mean, we certainly didn't. And my COO said no. My president said no. And I heard about it. I'm like, "Look, I'm already in town. I don't know what it is either, but it's better than nothing. And I like the group anyway. So, yeah, they're going to give me 100 of these Bitcoins or whatever, black-eyed beans. I didn't know what this was." And I said, "Sure, tell them how do we get it? How do we take it?" We knew nothing. I took the 100 pieces. I think I sold 7 or 8 pieces to handle the flight there and back. That's how conservative I am. I'm like, sell off something to pay for the trip. That way I'm neutral. We ended up with 92 Bitcoin or something. I mean, they're worth, $9 million today. And that was the best speaking gig that I've ever done. And then slowly, once I had that experience, my onboarding was very simple. I didn't read the Bitcoin Standard. I didn't listen to Mike Saylor for 100 hours. I didn't go into Bitcoin rooms. I didn't learn about the blockchain. I was onboarded with boom here. And, I bought some more in 15, bought some more in 20. I've been adding ever since. And met with Mike Saylor just last year at the end of the year, about October, and said, "Hey, Mike, I have a big audience. I've raised $1.6 billion from my audience for real estate transactions. How could I add Bitcoin to my real estate acquisitions?" And he says, "Look, you need to be private. You need to be a public company and just do what I'm doing." And You get securitized money. I said, I don't even know what that is. Like, what are you talking about, securitized money? Like, and you borrow, get your stock. And I'm like, I'm not public. I'm not a public company. He says, well, that's your problem. Figure it out. I'm telling you what to do. So I went home and I put together, basically, we buy a piece of real estate, pretend the water bottle's the real estate. And then we add $15 million of Bitcoin, about 15%. We're trying to buy the real estate 85 to 80% below replacement cost. Best in class real estate. We add the Bitcoin and the property still cash flows. We don't use any debt on the activity at all, knowing we can go get debt later. So when I show Mike this, the second time I visited Mike, he's like, why are you not using debt? I said, because I'm going to go get it later. Why aren't you public? I said, well, I'm going to go public later. I'm going to reverse invert the model. Okay. So I can always go get debt against the real estate. I can always get 65% debt on the real estate because the real estate still cash flows. This is not a home. So
Exactly.
I need your listener to understand this is like, give me the Melbourne deal. Let me show them that Melbourne deal. This is a piece of real estate, 300 units. That is going to be three, it's going to cash flow 350 a month, $4.2 million a year when we pay cash for it. I'm going to use that $4.2 million to buy more Bitcoin.
Nice.
So in 4 years, I'll have, $17 million of Bitcoin that was purchased by the residents. Yeah, that one right there. This is the kind of stuff we buy. Beautiful, beautiful assets,
Oh, nice.
I was Grant. I was
And
just in Melbourne, Florida, man. I would like I like the town. It's a nice area.
that whole area is exploding, right?
Yeah.
SpaceX, Elon's up there. So you still need to buy great real estate. Now, the Bitcoin, the maximalists, the Mike Saylors are going to be like, Mike even said, I came back to Mike the second time. I said, Mike, look, what this is what I'm going to do. 85, 15, 85% real estate, 15% Bitcoin. He's like, well, dude, that's a pussy fund.
Yeah,
True story.
he's nuts. He's so aggressive. He's
He's very
I
aggressive.
said, but Mike, by the time I get to year four, without any appreciation in either one of them, like assume nothing happens in either one, I'm in a 70-30. Okay. And he's like I said, changes nothing. I said, but when I get volatility, when both of them explode, okay, I brand the property 10X. I do a better job of operations. I raise the rents over 4 years, 8 years, and 12 years. I go from a $1,800 rent to a $3,000 rent. My real estate explodes. It's worth $150 million. I paid $72 million. My Bitcoin goes from, at that time, it was $90,000. It goes to, let's say it goes to $250,000. Dude, I have two assets, best in class assets that are real, that have different kind of functionality, that are both moving in the right direction. Now I can add debt to both of them because I know that this is a better mortgage product. I'm going into the future now. In 2029, what's better than a 10-year mortgage on a piece of real estate? A 10-year mortgage on a piece of real estate combined with Bitcoin. Because now I have instant liquidity 24/7 against a cash flowing asset that is real to Fannie and Freddie. Freddie Mac was in here this morning. So they don't know how to do this yet. But I'm building out 10 of these funds. We're on number four right now. Here, I'm gonna show you, I'm gonna share my screen with you. Okay, we're doing this one right now. And this is what it looks like. This is the property, Miami, sexy, great location. So we'll buy the real estate. It's $125 million. We'll include $25 million of Bitcoin at the purchase and count it as zero. So in the first year, I'm going to add, let's say the real estate, the blue line is the real estate, okay, right? Let's say I have no appreciation year one, year two, year three, I get a little appreciation. Year four, I get a little bit. This is extremely conservative. It's basically attracting a conservative investor, but along the way, we're buying Bitcoin with renters' money. so that the Bitcoin over the next 5 years or whenever it hits $1 million, I think that's $1 million Bitcoin right there, 5 or 6 years. I think that's real. Well, the real estate's worth $150 million and the Bitcoin's worth 355. So imagine what we could do. Okay. Imagine in year four, somebody comes to me and says, I'll buy your real estate for $150 million. I'm in at 120. I make $30 million for our investors, and we own all this Bitcoin for free. By then, I would own what? I'd own 280 pieces, and I have no debt on any of it. Or year two, interest rates go to 4%. I take 65% loan on the real estate. I'm not over leveraging anything. I can never lose any of this stuff. Or 2 or 3 years from now, Howard Lutnick and Cantor, they see what I'm doing. Or a year from now, JJ, we go public with 10 of these, $1 billion and a couple $100 million of
Jeez.
Bitcoin on our books. And we go
And
public with this, and the company basically inverts what Saylor's doing,
then,
and the
yeah, and
stock comes out and it doesn't trade for 15 or 17 times earnings like most REITs do, but it trades for 50 times earnings.
oh, definitely, because he's got himself a printing press. He writes convertible debentures and uses the money to buy Bitcoin, and it's one of the only companies that writes convertibles where the stock keeps going higher. And that's a beautiful thing because usually when you write a convertible, you dilute the stock. And he's really built a nice machine there. So this is even, this is a beautiful take on that too, because you're combining, you can get both investors, not only the spec people, but you've got people who believe in real estate because you can see it, you can touch it, you can feel it. And there's still a lot of objection to that with Bitcoin, especially with older people, right? They're like, I don't know what this is. Who invented it? Where did it come from? What is
Yeah,
all this
exactly.
stuff, right?
So
I
that's
can't touch
interesting,
it,
JJ. It's interesting you say that because our investors, our first fund, this is we're on our fourth one this year. We did our first one in January. The first fund we did was $88 million. 72 real estate, 15 Bitcoin. And our two biggest investors had never invested with me on anything,
Wow.
never invested in real estate, and never invested in Bitcoin. And they're both over 65 years old.
Nice. Nice.
They
Well, I
asked
mean,
no questions. They asked no questions about the Bitcoin. There was no onboarding.
yeah.
Onboarding was, here's a check for 25 million. Another guy, here's a check for 15.
That's amazing.
Because it
That's
took the volatility story out. Like, I don't have to
exactly
onboard the guy and explain to him
right
what
to him.
Bitcoin is because he sees the stability of the blue line. The blue line is just, you get it.
Is the buildings. Yeah, and that's beautiful. Yeah, I'd love to work with you. I'm a stock mechanic and I'm a 150 call a day guy, so I'm
Yeah, I
ready.
you know, I think, these things, Grant, as far as like merging BTC and real estate have been around for a decent amount of time. And like I think like a big thing, at least like my personal opinion, I see like a lot in like the crypto space is like there's I don't think they're like good business people a lot of the time. And so like when I see someone like yourself get involved and like seeing this, I'm like, oh man, okay. We need somebody like that to get the ball rolling, I feel like, because I think a lot of them are just not sharp business people. Like maybe like good idea people, but not implementing these things. And when I saw someone like you doing this, I'm like, oh hell yeah. Like we're maybe going into the future now.
Yeah. And this is exactly what Michael Saylor said to him. He's like, look, you have a massive audience. He knew more about me than I thought he knew about me when I got to his house. He's like, you have a massive audience. You have tremendous trust with the audience. You've been distributing. He knew what my distributions were from Cardone Capital. We distribute about $8 million a month, and I've been doing that for 6 years. And he's like, this is going to be a great way. I think he underestimated my ability to onboard people like this. But again, it's still tiny compared to what he's doing because he's all plugged into the institutional marketplace and the stuff that JJ knows that I don't know. The cool thing I'm doing is these are regular people investing with me, bro. I'm onboarding hundreds of people. every time I do one of these funds into becoming Bitcoin investors. And the best way to learn about anything is to simply do it. You can't learn how to swim reading.
True.
Very true.
I love and I love that about you too, man. Like you said, like you learned about Bitcoin from having it, and like, yeah, because it's one thing taking knowledge you learn and read from a book and applying it in practice, and sometimes just throwing yourself in there and like, you know, learning quickly from trial and error is the best. When you met with Sailor Grant, I wonder if he brought this up to you, because like he's like a big thing on like Bitcoin. I think he referred to it as kind of like digital, like owning p like digital Manhattan, like owning like property in Manhattan. Do you kind of view Bitcoin like in a similar way, or were you buying kind of into what he was saying about it?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, when we own an asset for 10 or 15 or 20 years, which is what we do, I got plumbing, I got roofs, there gutters, I got termites, I got bed bugs, I got rust, corrosion. Like, there's so many problems with real estate, which is the opportunity for me, by the way. Because most people want to own real estate, but they don't want to put up with the bullshit. Evictions,
Sure.
property taxes, insurance problems, cleanups after storms, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on forever. Now, that being said, Bitcoin doesn't have any of that. But, if you're not quite there yet, and you're like, but what is it? Where is it? How do I know it's not a scam? Look, I still have about 2 or 3% reservation on what the damn thing is today. I just keep waking up. I can't re forget. What's his name did? FTX. I can't. Anybody who forgets that's an idiot. Yeah, I can't forget what Bernie Madoff did. I can't forget that Lehman Brothers went busted after 180 years. So. I worry about that. I don't want to lose money, dude. I am not a trader. Okay. I am not a trader. I said this early. I have no degen in me. And a big score does not make me feel good. I want to get rich for sure. I don't want to get rich quick.
Well, and I guess the good thing with like the whole well, to may not to say to counter the FTX thing, but like that's why they say, you know, take your Bitcoin off exchange, you know, you self custody your Bitcoin, you own it in your cold wallet, you take it off exchange.
Yeah, there's problems with that too, though,
Well, yeah, you could lose the private keys.
Yeah, dude, what's worse than having it stolen from you? Fucking forgetting your own number.
Yeah.
I
That's
can't even
I
find my own shit. Who rip you off? I rip myself off.
Well, I guess you
And
got to take the measures there.
again, I think that this is why we're still so early is because a lot of people my age. Even people 40 years old, look, even the young people don't want kids because they don't want the responsibility. They don't want to buy a car because they don't want the responsibility. They don't want to own a home because they don't want to mow the grass, dude. A lot of people simply do not want responsibility. That's why ETFs work so well. That's why the 401ks and the IRAs and the Roth scams, those scams were made Vanguard worth $11 trillion because people are lazy. And they don't want to be held responsible for their money. They'd rather give it to somebody else and say, hey, charge me a fee. I don't even want to see what it is. And I'll see you when I retire. And I hope that there's something there.
Well, and that's what gives edge to people like ourselves, right? Is that we don't think in that manner. Grant, I guess like maybe skipping ahead a little bit on this, like BTC and real estate combination. Do you see like a future where like Cardone Capital owns like BTC backed real estate or like tokenized properties on chain? Is that maybe like down the line?
This is what I wish I would have never heard about that because I'd be doing today what I'm doing today 4 years ago had I not had people trying to talk me into putting my real estate on the blockchain. That just wasted a whole bunch of time for me. It's not practical. There's no reason to do it. You're not trading titles by fractions. Nobody's successfully figured out how to turn a piece of real estate into a security like that. And I'm open to your listeners telling me I'm completely wrong about it. They're probably going to say, yeah, but what about the hotel in Aspen? Yeah, well, why didn't they do a second hotel and a third one and a fourth one and a fifth one and a sixth one? The fact that they didn't repeat the process means there's something wrong with that process. So I've done four funds already. I'll do 10 by July. I don't need the assets sitting on the blockchain.
Interesting.
I do want to convert it to a piece of paper so people can trade it 5 days a week. And I could get the explosion of Grant Cardone pumping on it. Maybe not the stock. Like Saylor never talks about strategy. He talks about Bitcoin. He's figured out how to blow on his fire without violating the SEC. Right, JJ?
Definitely. The SEC is well, they're kind of toothless now, but back in the day, they, I mean, anyone who's ever dealt with them, gosh, it's, it's like getting covered in honey and rolling around with ants, because they just have more time than sense and unlimited resources, and then you're there with your $2,000 an hour lawyers, and they just wear you out, So I completely understand his trepidation with that, but he's a really sharp guy, and he saw something that nobody didn't see. And we had Hunter Horsley from Bitwise on our podcast, who did one of the first ETFs, Bitcoin ETFs. And once they figured out the counterparty risk, that's what FTX, once they figured out how to secure the counterparty risk, and the institutions jumped in, now we're good to go, with it, which is that's what it's all about, is counterparty risk.
Well, and I think the interesting thing about BTC that, like, I'm thinking of this, JJ, because this is what Hunter Horsley brought up, that like the spheres of Bitcoin, like people like Bitcoin for like different reasons. So you have people who just like want to make money, invest. Then you have people who are like really into the technology and like the philosophy around like self-ownership, like not having to rely on an intermediary, like all that stuff. And then like now, like we're getting into like people who like the use cases, like real, like, so this, the spheres of overlap make it like a real explosive combination. And so yeah, I think it's interesting from that respects too. Just got to take a quick time out here to announce the rebranding of our trading Discord server to the Trading Syndicate, offering not only ES, where JJ teaches and trades, but other futures, instruments, stocks, crypto. And we have daily fantasy sports and sports betting, which I'm highly active in. Come visit us at thetradingsyndicate.com. Grant, I just want to kind of ask you a few things that would relate to our audience. I think from as far as like a trading and investing standpoint that we can use from what you do to what we do. I believe you've used leverage to scale real estate. Obviously, in trading, people use leverage, can blow people up. Obviously, got to be careful. So, what do you think the difference is between smart leverage and super leverage?
Well, the amount, clearly the amount of it. I again, I'm risk averse. I don't want to lose. I don't think that there's a big. I hear a lot of people brag about their losses and oh, that's what made me. Bro, I hope I never have a loss that makes me. Okay, like,
Oh, exactly.
thank you, but no, thank you. I do not need to learn. There's an old Buddhist saying. Wise man learns from the mistakes of others, and an ignorant man learns from his own mistakes. So,
I love that.
the
Well, it's
wealthiest people on the planet have made, they first of all, they don't diversify, as we're told, as the common people are told to diversify.
right.
Steve Jobs had two stocks when he died. Elon's got five. He owns them all. He has no other investments other than what he's invested in. Warren Buffett, it made all his money in one company at 50 years old. He couldn't take a larger position in the company, so he was forced, because of his wealth, to go research another company. Next thing you know, he owns two companies and has massive positions in them. He's not a trader. He doesn't own any mutual funds. He doesn't own 401ks or IRAs or Roths. Like, these things, All three of these people, by the way, own less than one home. Steve Jobs owned one home. Warren Buffett never owned more than one. And Elon just bought a comp built a compound for his 19 kids. So I don't think he'd own a home if it wasn't for the kids.
No,
My
no.
point is, like, leverage will kill you. It's like a drug. It's the only thing, by the way, that corrects the real estate market. There is no real estate correction without a debt correction first. Actually, there's never, ever a real estate correction without a debt problem in the history of the world. That's the only time real estate corrects in value is when there's a debt issue in correlation to it. And so, as sexy as it might be, and you're doing calls and puts and buying on margin, okay, good. But show me somebody super wealthy that's doing that.
Great point. Yeah, and to your
Definitely.
point too, and like you strike me as the same way. Like the like you talk about Steve Jobs, Elon, the it's like a just a laser focus on like the mission on like. There's just an ambition there where like it's not about the money, it's about like this is what I love doing. Yeah, so you know that's the similarities I see there. Grant, in trading we talk about like sitting on cash. People wait for certain things to matriculate before they put a trade on, and it's dependent on the individual. Is there equivalent in your world to like sitting on cash, or are you always deploying capital?
I try not to sit on cash. I look at the first thing I do every day is after waking up is I look at my cash accounts and I'm trying to deploy that money. I know money is being destroyed. I've known that before Bitcoin became a story and the fiat and the Federal Reserve and the Jekyll Isle book, Jekyll Island book. And I'm 67 years old. 90% of all dollars has been destroyed. Via inflation and printing money in my lifetime. It's going to continue. The graph looks like this, goes straight down. And why would you keep cash? Again, these are myths that are intertwined into our society and our education that encourage people to save money at the bank. Oh, the old trusty Bank of America and Wells Fargo. But the American public does not understand the bank does not keep your money in the bank. They call a guy like me and says, "Hey, would you like to borrow this money?" And so I'm trying to get rid of cash, dude. I'm trying to convert. I try to get as much cash as I can from other people on a daily basis. Get the cash, whatever, $1 million, and I'm gonna go deploy the $1 million into an illiquid event. I don't want liquidity. I had liquidity. I don't want it now. I want to convert it to something not liquid. And I'm hoping that the federal government prints money today. Go get some more cash, because if they're printing money, there should be more cash to get. So I'm not opposed to printing money. I'm like, pr don't tax me and print. That would be my proposal. Print as much as you want, dude, because I'm going to be at the front of the line hustling the print. I'm going to take the print. I'm going to grab it. I'm going to dump it. I'm going to dump it into a real asset like a Bitcoin or like a real estate. Now, if you're on the come up, I don't know why you would dump it into Bitcoin right now, because really what you need in the beginning is two flows of income. The one I'm going to get every day that requires talent, courage, energy, confront, and persistence. And then I'm going to go buy. I need a flow of income, dude. Like in the beginning, you need earned income, and I need a passive flow of income. That's why I like the real estate. Once I have the two flows rocking, then that second flow gives me enough to start catching up with my earned. Then maybe I can start buying real estate, or I could start buying Bitcoin out of my surplus so that I create wealth sometime in the future.
Yep, makes sense.
Nice, nice.
I think of what with Saylor. I don't know if he mentioned this to you at all. He was saying that like I guess quickly back to like the Bitcoin thing of it. It made me think of it what you were saying that like he was saying like the first government to print
Yeah.
fiat to buy Bitcoin is going to win.
Yeah,
And there's like and not to get too deep into this because I'm not, but like there's like this PhD thesis on Bitcoin as a tool for like power projection through cyberspace. Major Jason Lowry wrote it for MIT. He's in Space Force, Grant. Bitcoin almost like even being protected as like a Second Amendment, right? Like that it's going to be used through like digital, I don't say like warfare, but yeah, as a means of like, it's
Imagine,
crazy.
yeah, imagine if the US government, and I don't know constitutionally whether this could even happen, but imagine if they dumped half of their gold position
Yeah.
today and converted that to Bitcoin. You could literally destroy China and Russia's dependence upon gold as a standard. I mean, I don't think they would do it because it would disrupt things so
To
violently.
yeah.
Um,
But you could do
to be
these
in
things.
agreement.
Yeah. I mean, is that something too, Grant, that's given you like a little bit more comfortability with like doing a merged fund with the administration being so accepting of it?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, I had Eric Trump on my stage. Like he's as pro Bitcoin as you can get. I've
Yep.
had Donald, I've interviewed Donald Jr., I've interviewed the president. These are very pro crypto. His entire Howard Lutnick, I
Yep.
belong to his club. Howard owns a
Of
couple
course.
hundred million dollars of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Uh, he he owns Cantor Fitzgerald. I went and pitched my Bitcoin real estate hybrid fund to Cantor. They've been here 8 times from New York, flew down here 8 times. Because they're very, very interested in this fund, not just taking it public, but also the possibility of a mortgage security, a long-term mortgage security that would compete with a Fannie or Freddie.
Yeah. That's
So
awesome, man.
I think that there's just tremendous things that are going to happen going forward, and we have the right administration to start thinking outside the box. Now, how that hits some of our other monetary restrictions and you don't want to turn the whole world upside down. That's not good for anybody. But guys like me, see, the one thing I would tell everybody is like, if you want to create some of these new products, do it. Don't talk about it. Like when I went to Cantor and showed them what I'd done, they're like, when are you going to do your first one? I'm on my fourth one, bro. What are you talking about? Well, how are you doing this? My audience is funding the projects with me. Well, what sovereign fund help you? None. What bank? None. When did you bring it to the street? I haven't been to the street. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm doing this with regular people. I went to Main Street and then I take
Exactly.
it to Wall Street.
Exactly. Because then, and when you actually do go public, right? That's like my idea is to get Main Street involved, build a nice big shareholder base, and
Yeah.
when you light the fuse, and what like you don't get 5,000, 10,000, 100,000 shareholders, even 1 million shareholders, even if they own $100, $200 worth of stock, right? When you light the fuse, I've run promotions where you light the fuse on those, you take the stock from 50 to $150, and it just gaps and gaps and gaps.
Yeah.
Because those retail people, if they believe in you, right, they'll buy more,
Yeah.
and that's how you create a market. That's beautiful. That's really, really cool. It's really nice to see. And really quick interjection. I think it was 2012 when I had my heart attack. I had just been at the bottom of the barrel and just lost everything. And I remember seeing, I think it was one of your videos where you're talking about how things got bad, and I think it was something got cut off, and you were talking about how difficult it was and how you found that spark. And I just want to thank you for that because it really hit home with me, and it gave me that shot of energy that I needed when I was really, really down in the it, like I had a quintuple bypass.
Wow.
My partner stole all our money. We were going to start a hedge fund. On the verge of divorce, SEC's like chomping at my ass, like every possible thing, and I didn't even have strength. I'm sitting there with my chest cut open, and then I saw that video, and you were talking about how you and your wife struggled, and that really meant a lot to me. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you, man. I'm glad you saw it, and I'm glad it helped you.
Definitely.
Yep. on the one thing, it's funny, Grant. I think like your strength, man, just from somebody on the outside, and like, I love, like, obviously I've studied people like you and like Elon, as all these other people we were talking about, and like there's no one that I think is going to outmotor you like ever. And I think that's like the lesson, like just like the just like the sheer like willpower, and like in that hustle, like there's just so much to that where maybe some people are overthinking, trying to be deliberate, think they're smart and like calculated, and sometimes just yo, just fucking go. Just go.
So look, it took me, somebody said, man, it was maybe 2 years ago, there was a space on X. It was debating what's better, real estate, Bitcoin, or stocks. And I came away from that. I was just there to learn and listen and try to understand. And I came away from that saying, why do you need to pick? What if you could put all three of them together? Because Bitcoin people have a lot in common with real estate people. They like the scarcity. And, both the real estate and the Bitcoin benefit from the fiat destruction. The printing of money benefits real estate. And so I think there's a lot of commonalities. And then there's some pieces between the two, the hybrid, where the real estate cash flows and the Bitcoin doesn't. The real estate doesn't have volatility. The Bitcoin does. One's not liquid ever, by the way. Even if you have no debt, real estate, when I buy a $140 million real estate deal, that is not a liquid asset, even if I have no debt on it. You're not liquidating that this week, but you can liquidate as much Bitcoin as you want today. They combine that would be in a stock, the hybrid, the two would be in a piece of paper, and then you get that big that explosion upward.
Yeah, I love the idea. On the front of like the tariffs, and I know you've been pretty outspoken about being pro tariffs. The people that are in Bitcoin, they've been like, I think, having this thesis for like a little while now that seeing this as maybe a sign of like de-dollarization, economic decoupling from China, and that actually being a good thesis for holding Bitcoin. Do you see that potentially like happening down the line, like the de-dollarization and the decoupling from China?
I mean, I don't think we get off the dollar. I think we're a long way away from getting rid of the dollar. What's better than a dollar?
Well, at least saying like globally, like if you know what I'm saying, like if we're us and China are less dependent upon each other economically, and that we start seeing a de-globalization, which would maybe put a less emphasis on the dollar in other parts of the world.
Yeah, I think Trump just proved that China can't exists without American consumers. Look, we're the consumer nation on planet Earth. Like you cannot even, there's not even a second close. Like there, a sailor said there's no close second. Well, guess what? There's no close second when it comes to consumers. We have 355 million consumers. We are committed to consuming. We're committed to debt. We buy tennis shoes and bicycles and cars and houses and dude, Americans are the greatest consumer spectator on planet Earth. And I would suggest that it's harder to create a consumer nation than it is a manufacturing nation. So, because
Interesting.
nobody's done that. Nobody's created a consumer nation. So all these countries are very, very dependent upon our ability to consume goods and services. I think it's very degraded that we consume everything. I think we consume more prescription medication in this country than every other country combined, with only like 5% of the population of planet Earth.
Jeez.
So,
That's not good.
no, that's not good at
Yeah,
all.
that's not
But
good.
so I don't think you ever get rid of the dollar. I mean, I de definitely I think it's worth nothing.
Interesting. So that's interesting, because I haven't heard that before. It's harder to be a consumer, to create a consumer nation, than a manufacturing
I mean,
nation.
nobody's done it.
But what is one? I mean, we still kind of want to be able to manufacture. Like, there, we would be at risk if we don't start manufacturing. Like, I would
We're at
do.
risk now then. We don't manufacture anything.
That's true,
We
but
manufacture
I guess
no furniture.
and I think it was someone in Trump's administration that I thought it was a brilliant paper actually, like that. Like, we could be at risk though, Grant. Like, if we
We
don't,
are.
if with the, and that's why we're coming with the tariffs and we're doing these deals, because we
Yeah.
would be at risk down the
I agree.
line because of not being able to manufacture anything.
I agree. Now, I think AI handles all that here because everybody's like, well, even if you put the tariffs on, how long does it take to build a plant? Folks, you can't keep saying that. You got to say, hey, we're going to build a plant. Now, the question is, how fast do you want to build plants? But we have no commitment from anyone to build anything. In Dubai, I can build a 80-story building in 7 months from design, from dropping a shovel in the ground, design, dropping a shovel to completely erected. I could do that in 7 months. In
Wow.
California, that would take 10 to 12 years.
That's amazing.
We got 10X California, right, Grant?
Oh, you got a 10X California for sure. Otherwise, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
And
Wow.
so my point is, we could build manufacturing in a couple of weekends if we had a commitment to it.
Yeah.
And I know that's a bit of an absurdity, but we have no commitment, bro. Like, there's no commitment to building. Okay.
Right.
So they're working deals out right now to do it, though. And
Yeah.
then when the robots become a reality, because the second complaint or argument everybody has is, we can't build the plants. And number two, we don't have enough workers. Okay. Everybody's going to have a robot in the
Well, that's
future.
not going to matter. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it's already, I'm seeing some of the videos from like what Elon, like the Tesla robots, like I mean, my God, it's insane. So I guess on that topic too, because I wanted to ask you about AI. Like, I guess like one, maybe just general overarching thoughts on like AI, maybe how it's disrupting business. And then two, like, are you implementing AI into anything that you're doing?
Yeah, we use AI every day here, both in our marketing programs, also in our educational platforms. We have an educational company that does about 150 million bucks a year. AI is used in all that development of curriculums, education, testing, measuring. 10X Health System, a company I bought 3 years ago, it was doing 200 grand a month. It'll do 10 million this month. We bought that company, bought out the partners, and we used AI to actually create a precision genetic test, and then used AI again to create precision supplements.
That's sweet.
Yeah, your supplements come in a bag that looks like this with your name on it,
Okay.
and they're genetically precision manufactured for exactly the amounts you need in your daily supplements. So you don't have to go to CVS anymore and buy
Yeah.
a bottle of vitamin C that's made the same for you as it is for me, when everybody knows your kid might need a different vitamin C than I need.
Yeah, it's that's so sweet, man. Like, I think that's like what's like super exciting. I've heard people, you know, like geneticists, and talk about this, like using the AI to help, because like we barely even know a lot of the human genome, or you know, and using AI to like parse through like that immense amount of data. Like, it's gonna be so trippy, like
Yeah.
what we find out. It's gonna be insane.
It's going to be awesome, dude. We've only uncovered like 1% of the ocean bottom. And with AI, who knows, 10 years from now, we could have uncovered all that. I mean, we just Google mapped the entire planet here in the last decade. So that's going to be super cool, right? When
It's
the
gonna be
benefits
sick.
of all that start rolling.
It's gonna be sick. I've even seen some people think that like if you could just survive to like 2030, that like they're gonna be able to like figure out like if it, you know, you got like the parabolic curve, but like if we can figure out things, like it's gonna be at such a rapid rate that if you survive to 2030, you might be able to like, I don't know, like long jet 200 years, 300 years for human being. I don't know.
Well,
Anyway,
that'd be cool.
I guess, I suppose.
That's what Brian Johnson is working on.
That guy Brian Johnson. Grant, I know you gotta, I get you on your way here. One other thing I want to ask you. Oh no, on the AI front, man, I don't think like with all the AI stuff, I don't think there's going to be an AI that can sell like a Grant Cardone trained closer. I don't think that's happening.
Well, I think the people that are worried about AI replacing you, look, if you're an ATM, I mean, I said this years ago when I grew up, if you wanted to deposit your money at a bank or you wanted to get money from the bank, you drove your car to this little teller. You talked to Mary. Mary said, "Hey, Mary, who are you? They don't know me. I had to wait." The whole thing was dysfunctional. It was terrible. Today, here we are 30 years later. There is, there's no tellers at the bank. There's no waiting. When you go to Starbucks, all this is accelerating right now. You don't make your order at the counter anymore and wait in line. You mobile it in, boom, it's sitting there for you. All this is going to get expedited. Now, is that going to replace a guy like me? Ain't nothing replacing me. I'm one of a kind. I have tremendous work ethic. Maybe 10 of them replace me, or maybe 10 of them don't replace me, but they duplicate my efforts. But dude, we're doing this. You're not doing this with my robot.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think there's still a place. Like, we'll find a place still for like.
Human contact.
There has to be. There
Definitely.
absolutely has to
Organic.
be. It's. I mean, just
Yeah.
for our survival. I mean, it's like we have to, like, our well-being, et cetera, all that. Last thing, Grant, I want to ask you because I found this interesting, and I kind of want to know, why the push forward or the campaign on like 10x California. Like, what's the objective there? Flip California or?
Yeah, well, what happened was here, I'm going to show you another picture here. When the fires came January 7th, I think it was the 7th. That's my house right there.
Sheesh.
Oof. The one standing, 17 homes next to me, all burnt to the
Oh,
ground.
okay. So yours is the one standing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm the blessed one.
Wow.
And I've been telling the state of California this for 20 years. The Coastal Commission in the state of California, forget Gavin Newsom. He's just one of the soldiers of these invisible organizations that want to drive people out of California. And there's a program for doing that. One is don't rebuild anything ever. This is a land grab, bro. This is the greatest land grab in the history of the United States of America. And don't forget that, all that land was grabbed from the Indians. So they're just going to repeat what was done. California, Utah, Arizona, Nevada, they were all purchased from the Indians for nothing. I think we forgave $3 million worth of debt. It was nothing. And this is happening again in the state of California. Now, the reason I say that, people might be like, oh, yeah, dude, that's crazy. Like, all those homes that burnt down were built of timber 50 years ago. That entire coastline, except for my house and the next house that didn't burn, 17 over, have been built in the last 15 years out of concrete, glass, and steel, including my house. Concrete, glass, and steel does not burn, no matter how much fire you put on it, bro. Timber, wood, as most people know, that's been sitting out on a beach for 50 years, cooking in the sun for 50 years,
Yeah. Wow.
drying out for 50 years, expanding and contracting for 50 years with very little rain on it. When you drop a spark on it, bro, a spark, okay? You light up the entire thing like a matchbook. The
Yeah.
Coastal Commission knew that. You cannot be this ignorant. There's no way that you can have this much incompetency in one location. So if it's not incompetency, then it's intentional to burn the coastline down. Now, I just heard this last Monday, not this one, but 2 Mondays ago. One of the largest insurance companies in the world, because I have a big claim on my property for the damage. They called me and said, "Grant, we're hearing that the state of California is going to put eminent domain on the Malibu
Really?
coastline."
Whoa.
Now, how would they do that? They would say, let me bring you back to picture. This is breaking news, by the way. Nobody knows about this yet. This is what got me involved in the 10X California platform. See all that when it rains, that's just four or five homes right there. There's 17 of them and another 14,000 structures that are sitting up on a coastline that inclines downward. And every time it rains, bro, you got all those toxins running off into the ocean and to the beach. So I think what's going to happen is the Coastal Commission is going to allow these guys to clean up. They're just cleaning up the first homes. And then they're going to say, before you build again, we'll approve your build, but we need you to do bore testing
Oh,
to be sure that there's no toxins on the beach.
yeah.
And they're going to come back and they're going to do what they've been doing for years, which is saying, oh my God, we got toxins and it's going to kill people and it's not safe and blah, blah, blah. And they're going to say, you know what? We're going to take this land back, pay you guys all off for the sake and safety of the people of California. They did this during COVID, by the way. I know people are like, oh, that's crazy. Bro, they did this. They ran the same book in COVID.
Wow.
Plexiglass, a mask, vaccines, and boosters, and it's for your safety.
It's always masked in good intention, goodwill, Grant.
Yeah.
Thank God we live in Florida. With
Yeah, but
that.
if they pull it off in the state of California, they pulled it off in Maui.
Yeah.
They pulled it off in North Carolina. And now they're like, I wonder if we could pull it off here. This is the greatest resource America has. And so this is why we started 10X California to raise money, where I go over there and I'm trying to stop the nonsense and flip the state red. A lot of people think that I'm running for governor. That is not the point right now. The point is to see if we can get the state, the people in California, energized enough to get off this blue stance or this I'm a Democrat label or I'm a liberal or I'm guilty about all the success we have here or whatever is driving this insanity to vote a certain way. When in truth, what's happened in the state of California with migration, illegals, housing prices, rent prices, taxes, gas prices, it is indefensible. No one can defend. This has nothing to do with Donald Trump or Republicans. You cannot blame it on the other side. Okay. This has got nothing to do with red or blue. This is something to do with a handful of people trying to grab the greatest resource we have in America, arguably would be the state of California.
Do you feel I know California's voted more red than typically during the last election. So do you feel pretty like confident that like maybe people aren't as like, because a lot of these people are just so stuck in a stance that
Yeah,
like some.
if they had the right, they have to have the right leader, bro. It's gonna have to be somebody that's not Trump, but it also can't be the people they have running right now. The Democrats are gonna run whoever they want to run, and they're gonna raise $400, $500 million. They'll raise whatever number they need to raise. But if a Republican or an independent were to win, it needs to be somebody that's no nonsense, transparent. And I don't know that the people want that. I don't know that the people in California could handle a guy like it need to be somebody similar to the way I speak to people and tell people, look, you're priced out of your homes. Okay. If you don't build new homes, pricing will continue to go up. Rent evictions are bullshit. They have never worked in any state, in any city in America. Rent evictions actually make housing more expensive. The Coastal Commission is a corrupt organization, worse than the mafia. And these environmental groups have done nothing for the environment but destroyed the environment. So now, if California's not ready for that message, bro, it don't matter who it is, because they lose. And unfortunately, America loses too because California is a phenomenal resource.
Absolutely. So with that, that's going to conclude today's episode of Confessions of a Market Maker. If you guys enjoyed the episode, please rate and review it for us. If you'd like to join a supportive and professional community of traders, you can join us at thetradingsyndicate.org. Grant, let the listeners know where they can find you. Anything else you want them to know?
Yeah, look at Cardone Capital if you want to see what we're doing with our Bitcoin real estate hybrid fund, cardonecapital.com. If you want to know what I'm doing in California, go to 10xcalifornia.com. It's basically a super pack for starting to put some pressure on some of these elections that are critical to getting America back on common sense.
Absolutely. So for Grant
Nice.
Cardone, I'm Judd Stud. He's the Gorilla of Howe Street. You stop, so.